All right, let's bring in Phil Rogers, senior writer of MLB.com, based in Chicago. Phil, we love having you on. How are you?
Hey, Phil.
I'm good. I'm at Guaranteed Rate Field right next to the cookie, so it doesn't get any better than that. And I've already learned one thing. I would have said, I would have been saying tie block, and you guys say it more like black.
No, it's block, block. Phil. That's on me, my man. I got stumbled up there. Too much coffee.
Oh, well, I get the area coffee. That'll do it.
All right. Tie block. Hey, Phil, a lot going on in Chicago, and we're glad to have you on today. And Cueto goes today, and we've speculated of what may happen over the next month. But bring us up to date, and you've done such a good job of doing it all year long with the Chicago Cubs and the National League Central and the Cubs' inability to hit certain types of pitchers, which is now becoming well known.
Yeah, I mean, they really from the start of the season, you know, they have guys they've been chasing pitches up in the strike zone. I assume that's what you're referencing, that you can get them out by throwing up in the strike zone, and you know, surprising inability to adjust back, and you know, really from the start of the season, Kyle Schwarber, as the leadoff man on opening day, didn't work at all. It's just sort of been one thing and then another to try to get that lineup going, and now they're not healthy. Ben Zobrist on the disabled list. He was a very important guy for them last year. So to get him back, to get Schwarber, who's now in AAA, get him back and going, those are probably the two items of interest right now.
Well, the Cubs are killing left-handed pitching. They're number one in the National League with an 818 OPS. Against right-handed pitching, they're 12th in the league with a 726 OPS and a batting average against left-handed pitching of 234 against lefties. That's last in the league. How does that come about?
Yeah.
I mean, think all the right-handed hitters they got.
It is hard to say. I mean, they do have, and it's a balanced lineup. It definitely should be a balanced lineup. Chris Bryant has been pretty good, not as good as previous years. The kids like Wilson Contreras, Addison Russell has been a big fall off this year from his tremendous 2016 season. When you look at them, I don't really zone in on certain areas where they are underperforming, because to me it's kind of been an across the board decrease in level of performance. I don't know if they have one single player, position player or pitcher, who's actually having a better year this year than he had last year. Think about that. You know, if you get counting 15 to 24 players, there's not a single one of them having a better year than they had last year.
No, that's probably the story. That is a good point. Phil Rogers with us, MLB.com. Phil, do you see changes? Again, it impacts what we do on the show with Johnny Cueto, and I always thought maybe there was a fit there, but as you say, maybe there's more issues than just the starting pitcher. But do you see them doing things before the deadline or around the deadline? If you do, what would you think they would do?
Well, you know, I think, the number one thing they've chased and the one thing they haven't been able to land in previous years is a starting pitcher in his prime that's with a controllable contract. I mean, they've done unbelievably well at trades for guys like Jake Arrieta and Kyle Hendricks, who they got after they have become seemingly expendable in other places or weren't yet established. But they haven't really been able to pull off a deal those controllable guys, the Sonny Gray, Chris Archer, Jose Tejada, guys that you can have beyond this year. And that's a big concern because more and more it looks like, Jake Arrieta and John Lackey will have to be replaced after the end of this year. Still don't know how that's going to play out, but they are they don't have guys in their system that they could just go down and get to fill in for the starting pitchers the way they have been at other positions. So if they made a move, and I know they'll look to make a move, I think it'll be for a controlling starting pitcher. Cueto is, you know this as well as anybody, Marty, that opt-out clause in his contract He's a tricky call. I mean, he'd almost, a team would have to know, almost have to extend him or get some kind of understanding about that, what he would do with the opt-out, because you don't know really if you're getting a guy that's controlled or a guy that's going to be a free agent very soon. And, you know, I don't see the Cubs paying heavily for a rental. I mean, there was talk Yu Darvish would be available. I don't think that'll be the case, because I think Texas is going to, you know, try to get this team into the postseason. But if whoever it is, a free agent at the end of the year that would become available, I don't see them paying heavily like they did last year to get a role this chap. But I think it killed Theo Epstein to give up his number one prospect last year.
Well, interesting. Well, it's going to be an interesting July for the Cubs to see if they can get an Archer or someone who can be controlled as opposed to the rental.
Right.
But I think they're going to be active in the market. And, Phil, they've got a ton of minor leaguers. Why it's interesting to us, and especially on the Cueto front, is that, you know, you have Albert Almora Jr., you have Happ.
Yep.
You've got two or three players down at Iowa, and any one of them would fit right into the Giants. So that's why I'd love to see a matchup with the Giants.
Yeah, they have a third baseman nobody ever talked about, Jamer Candelario.
Right.
Who, if they didn't have Chris Bryant, he would have been the everyday first baseman 2 years ago, and he's just, it's the worst example of a guy that's completely blocked. And he's a switch hitter, solid in the field, and he just, you know, he's come up with him, and he really hasn't done terrific right off the bat when he's come up, but he's a guy. And one reason, you know, I do think it's possible on August 1st, after the trade deadline has come and gone, we'll see the Cubs have made a big move and traded one of their major leaguers, and Theo Epstein or Jed Hoyer will be explaining that they needed to provide more clarity and a few less options. And, you know, I'm not so sure. Schwarber's an example in and out of the lineup. You know, at some point, they have more regulars than they have positions. And it's a great luxury to have, but when you look around the field and you see everybody underperforming, you know, one thing you can change is to get guys more consistent playing time.
Phil Rogers with us, MLB.com. Always good to have Phil on the show with us. Phil, David Ortiz had his number retired last night. Big celebration in Boston. I think he had part of Yawkey Way, perhaps, named after him. Maybe
he did, yeah.
A small part of it. But give me a perspective on David Ortiz and what he means to Boston with all the big names they've had there in the past, and also his future as a Hall of Famer.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure, you know, when you look at from 2004 to 13, you got three world championship teams there that he was right in the middle of. I think that's his legacy, is that, you know, he's a guy that was part of teams that won three in a place where nobody, you know, great players, Ted Williams, Carl Yastrzemski, couldn't win one. So I think that's his legacy, and I think it's huge. And I sense a groundswell building for him to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He is a very tough call for me, and he's actually, just the other day, I thought the millionth time, maybe I'll just stop voting, because there is no right answer. I don't vote for guys that have been linked to PEDs, and the way I would explain it is, you know, I'm sure I voted for guys that have used them and not been caught. I voted for Mike Piazza, for instance, you know, given all the suspicion. But my thought is, it's not fair to hold suspicion against somebody. So I say I can't assume what I don't know, and I also can't ignore what I do know. And, you know, Big Poppy was reported by the New York Times as having a positive test in that 2003-2004, anonymous random testing, where the samples should have been destroyed, and we shouldn't have had a list of people that had failed that. But he was on that list. It's nuanced, though, because he's the only guy that was on that list that strongly defended itself. And even the Players Association had representatives at the news conference where David Ortiz said, look, I didn't do this stuff, and I shouldn't be on the list. I'm not a cheater. So I don't know what to make of it, to tell you the truth, for myself. I based on my standard, I shouldn't vote for it, but I think he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I agree. There's no question. They're making him the Ted Williams Yastrzemski icon.
Yeah.
Even bigger than Jim Rice. I agree.
Well, he had a tough first pitch, ceremonious first pitch that he threw out last night. Pretty tough. I mean, it wasn't on 50 cents level, but for a DH, right? You saw that he hasn't had a glove or thrown a ball in a while. Hey, Phil, Patrick Connor here, and as long as we're talking Boston icons, well, let's do a Giant. You know, Pappy was responsible, or he had a big part in recruiting Pablo Sandoval to Boston, who is just, I mean, a very sad story because overweight, missing action, totally inept, back on the DL now with an ear infection, which is one of the all-time strange moments in baseball. What do you see happening to Pablo Sandoval and the rest of his career?
Yeah, sad story, except twice a month when those paychecks come in.
Yeah, and I know. That adds to the sorrow because this guy, hey, Phil, in December, Pablo Sandoval dropped one of the all-time infuriating comments when he was quoted as saying, I don't like getting up at 6:30 in the morning to go work out. It's hard.
Yeah, I know. Tell the guy working two jobs to support his family. I think he's going to get released. You know, I think the Red Sox have the money. I don't know when it will happen, but I don't see him recovering from the way he's played the last 2 years to be on a postseason roster for them this year. Mm-hmm. And make no mistake, they're all about winning the World Series this year, and they're going to want their very best roster. And you know, he's going to he would really have to turn it around in August and September. And you know, those things do happen, but if you're projecting right now, I don't see him being part of their postseason this year. And if you're there and you can't be part of your postseason and you failed this year in a chance, I mean, he really was given a chance to redeem himself, and it doesn't appear he's going to take advantage of that. So that being said, you know, teams eat crazy amounts of money, and I would not think they're going to let this go on into 2018.
No, I agree with you on that completely.
Wow.
Phil Rogers with us, MLB.com. Phil, we'll let you go on this one. Anthony Rizzo got in the middle of a storm this week, and Joe Maddon as well, and you're in Chicago, and I know there's strong feelings of Rizzo, clean player, and Andy Green said dirty player, and not dirty player, but cheap shot.
Yep.
The play at the plate. He did deviate a little bit off his course to get the catcher. What's your take on it?
I think heat of the moment, instincts, I think he did the wrong thing. And, you know, I think that's what everybody said that reviewed that tape and saw, you know, he had a straight line to the back of the plate. And that's the thing. That's what runners are supposed to do now, is to get themselves to home plate now that catchers can't block it. And, yeah, I think he veered a little bit and caught him with the shoulder. I think it was an old style hard nose type of a play, but I think it definitely was a violation of the current rules. Hey, and one last thing, unsolicited. We had a great event here today on the South Side, retirement of Mark Burley's number.
Very good.
And just a reminder, what a great pitcher this guy was. 214 wins. Oh, you'll like this. That's the only thing I'll go ahead and tell you from this. Was his 8-year-old daughter threw out the ceremonial first pitch to Mark Burley. That was one great thing about Burley. He caught the ceremonial first pitch throughout his entire tenure with the White Sox, as opposed to having a backup guy go out and do it. Burley always liked doing it. So his daughter threw him the first pitch today, and on the scoreboard afterwards, it said Braden Burley, 85 miles per hour. Mark Burley, 77 miles per hour in his prime.
It's true.
It was great.
Oh, very good. Phil, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Have a good day. Thank you. Boy, that's Phil Rogers. And he always does a great report.
Yeah, good job from Phil. Appreciate that.